from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
The High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Online at WVHTF.org. The West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers. Online at WVAFLCIO.org.
At the legislature today, the House Veterans Affairs Committee wants to make sure medical professionals are up to date in methods to treat the state's veterans who face a variety of challenges. We'll have that story. In the Senate, with so much focus on chemicals and water safety, the state fire marshal warns that there's another danger out there, gas well fires, and the lack of training of firefighters to put them out. These stories and more are coming up on the legislature today. The House of Delegates convened today at its regular time, 11 o'clock. They conducted some formalities on the floor and then recessed until 2. That ended up being about 3:30 as Democrats caucused for most of the afternoon. When the House gaveled back in, the members passed a bill raising the minimum wage. The vote was 89-5, with 6 absent or not voting. The other bills on the agenda passed unanimously. There's no word on what the lengthy caucus was about. So we move on to earlier today to a committee meeting about veterans' health. The 2012 West Virginia Veterans Survey, authorized by the legislature, found that between 40% and 50% of the state's veterans report suffering from symptoms of depression and post-traumatic stress disorder, and 20% reported giving serious thought to suicide. Only 15% to 20% of those affected veterans reported seeking mental health treatment. As Aaron Payne reports, the House Veteran Affairs Committee looked at a bill that would require continuing education of veterans' mental health.
House Bill 4318 would establish continuing education requirements for health and mental health professionals to increase knowledge and recognition of mental health issues faced by veterans. The requirements would apply to many different types of professionals that work with veterans, such as registered nurses, social workers, and chiropractors. Delegate Barbara Fleshour says that the main focus of the bill is to make sure these professionals properly know how to deal with these issues.
We have more veterans committing suicide in the United States then are killed by combat. This is a health condition. This is a mental health condition. I think when you die of something, that means it's a health condition. And not only that, members of this committee, including me, have had suicide in their family that is not veterans. And our physicians and our counselors and we don't know how to handle that.
The bill designates that the Cabinet Secretary of the West Virginia Department of Veterans Assistance will work with the boards in charge of the applicable professionals to determine the curriculum of the requirements and the number of hours of credit to provide to each. The Cabinet Secretary may also make recommendations to the legislature for additional professions whose patients and clients could benefit from the continuing education required. Chairman of the committee, Richard I. Quintus, says that the bill is needed because, according to the legislature's findings, most veterans do not seek the help that they need in this area.
A lot of times it's hidden from the family, but sometimes it's hidden from the soldier himself. He refuses to receive treatment, and we want the medical professionals to be able to ask, have you ever had these type of thoughts, in hopes of saving some lives. And so if they know of somebody in their family that loves them, it would help us to recognize that some people need the mental help that they have to get, and they can either get it through the state or the federal government.
The bill was approved by the committee and moves on to government organization. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
Regulatory issues this session have focused on the safety of the state's water supply after the chemical leak in early January. But one Senate committee is focused on safety of another kind. The Labor Committee is focused on the safety of workers and today discussed how to prevent and extinguish dangerous fires on horizontal well sites. Ashton Mara has more.
News broke yesterday of a gas well explosion and fire in Greene County, Pennsylvania, injuring one worker while a second is still missing. The well was just miles from the West Virginia border, close to the first senatorial district from which Senator Jack Yost hails, a district that's full of well sites of its own. In his labor committee today, Yost brought up the incident, saying this is exactly the type of event he wants to work to prevent in West Virginia. And he's calling on State Fire Marshal Anthony Carrico to help.
These operations are not necessarily the norm or the normal type of scenario that they encounter on a day-to-day basis.
Carrico is talking about firefighters in the state, most of whom are volunteers, who respond to well sites to handle explosions or fires. And while they're not that common, Carrico says they do happen in West Virginia. In 2013, five workers were killed on well sites and numerous emergency responders were injured.
More importantly, however, is their lack of training, in my opinion, to deal with this industrial type of a setting or explosion or fire. Just the amount of pressures and volume of gas in this case we're talking about far exceed the capacity of most fire departments to handle on scene, much less if they could even acquire a reliable water source.
But that information was concerning for Yost, who says emergency personnel need to know exactly what they're dealing with as they respond to these types of emergencies.
They need to know the chemicals. They need to know what can occur there at any moment. They need to know how to address it because it is a different, it's not a home fire or a factory. It's gas and chemicals, and it's a different scenario altogether. It's out in the middle of nowhere. They can't hook a hose or a water line up to something. There is nothing out there. Most of those wells are very isolated.
Members of the legislature passed the Horizontal Well Act during a special session in 2011. But now, like in so many other areas of regulation, lawmakers are finding things they hadn't considered. Things like the training emergency personnel are getting about well sites, something Carrico says at this point is not required by the fire marshal's office. But the type of training is up for debate. Senator Doug Faithmeyer, chairman of the Energy, Industry, and Mining Committee, says emergency responders only need to be taught the basics, how to secure the scene and set up a perimeter. From there, he says, professionals should be taking over.
When you go out on a well location, it should be handled by people who know what's going on that location. No disrespect to any of the volunteers, but, you know, there's some areas in West Virginia where we have sulfur, and you drill into that sulfur, it's a poison gas, and it's a very poison gas. And so you have to be aware of things like this. There's just a lot of things that I think that fighting well fires should be left to the people that's what they do is fight well fires.
In Pennsylvania Tuesday, state police set up a perimeter and Wild Well Control, a national group of well fire experts, were called in to handle the scene. But there are no expert groups located in West Virginia. There are some in the Northeast, but most are located in Texas or Oklahoma, meaning a long travel time. Faithmeyer, however, maintains they can be ready at a moment's notice to respond anywhere in the country. Yost feels there should be some basic education for emergency responders across the state for how to handle the situations, even if professional crews are being called to the scene. Carrico says he has no purview over that requirement, meaning lawmakers would need to make some changes.
It opened up more issues that we aren't aware of. Thought maybe he had some regulations or guidelines to go by. We learned that there isn't. So, you know, after the water issue, now we know there's other areas that we need to concentrate on to make sure the safety aspects are involved there.
He says he wants everyone to be on the same page and will be calling stakeholders into meetings throughout the next interim session to further study the issue. On the floor, senators voted on three bills, including one to rename the heads of Potomac State and WVU Tech presidents instead of their current provost title. Senators approved Senate Bill 133, a rules bill for the Department of Environmental Protection, Senate Judiciary Chair Corey Palumbo.
It contains 11 different rules, 7 air rules, a voluntary remediation rule, and a state certification rule, which all bring us in compliance with revisions to the federal counterpart.
Senate Bill 458 increases filing fees for civil lawsuits from $155 to $200. The bill also creates a fee for filing third-party complaints in suits set at the same amount. The fee does not apply to family court cases, and parties are only subject to the fee once during civil actions.
The money would go into a fund for civil legal services for low-income persons, and that would be administered by the Division of Justice and Community Services.
Senators also approved that bill on a 33-0 vote with one member absent. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
In a moment, we'll visit with the president of Marshall University. First, here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the Senate today. Among the bills introduced in the Senate today, Senate Bill 542, to require notice to the Division of Environmental Protection for a release of chemicals or fluids into groundwater, surface water, or subsurface soils. The bill further provides for penalties for knowingly and willfully failing to immediately provide the notice required. Senate Bill 543, to require a jobs impact statement to be prepared by the West Virginia Development Office in consultation with the Schools of Business and Economics at Marshall and West Virginia Universities when requested by the governor or presiding officer of either house of the legislature. Senate Bill 544, to allow sharing of juvenile records under certain circumstances with another state which has a reciprocal agreement with this state. Senate Bill 551, to require West Virginia municipal police officers to wear armored vests whenever feasible. Senate Bill 552, to increase the option for sentencing where a defendant is convicted of transporting narcotics into the state. Senate Bill 557, to authorize an additional circuit court judge for the 23rd Judicial Circuit consisting of Berkeley, Jefferson, and Morgan counties. There are no bills up for passage in the Senate tomorrow. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 307, to authorize pretrial release programs to evaluate and supervise persons on pretrial release as part of a community corrections program. And Senate Bill 356, the governor's bill to implement state purchasing reforms. Dr. Stephen Jay Kopp is completing his 9th year of service as the 36th president of Marshall University. President Kopp joined Marshall in 2005 following leadership positions with Midwestern University, Central Michigan University, and Ohio University. It was Marshall Day at the legislature today, so President Kopp is our guest. Welcome. What a great way to end the celebration of Marshall Day at the legislature.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you, Beth.
Thank you. It's great to be with you. Thank you very much. Well, let's talk finances first. How are they?
They're kind of rough right now.
Yeah.
We had a lot of conversations during Marshall Day with folks in the Senate, leadership in the Senate, leadership in the House, and we're concerned, very concerned.
What's been the history of the budget cuts for institutions?
We're looking at very substantial cuts for public higher education at Marshall. It's over $7 million. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at the budget projections for this upcoming fiscal year 15. The governor's proposed budget had a 3.75% reduction for public higher education institutions. However, we're hearing from the different folks in both the House and Senate that there may be wider budget gaps than originally anticipated. So that's certainly not a sure thing at this point.
How are you coping? How's the campus coping?
Well, the campus is coping, but it's getting down to the point where we're now going to be looking at not just cutting around the perimeter, of literally restructuring things. And I'm very concerned about what that means for personnel. I'm concerned what it means for internal financial aid that we provide and so on. We'll honor all of our commitments, obviously, but we're in the process of going through a very comprehensive examination of everything we're doing, and with an eye toward what seems to be happening, which is privatizing public higher education, not only in West Virginia, but it's happening nationally as well.
The privatizing
yes.
of public education. Describe that. What's happening? How
well,
is that
if happen? You look at what's happened to public support, especially since the recession really hit in earnest in 2008, and not just here in West Virginia, but all over the nation, state budgets have been stressed to very extreme measures because the economy has slowed down. It really has not recovered yet. We seem to be in a very slow phase of recovery at this point. And to make budgets balance, states are doing whatever they have to do to make that happen. And one of the areas that is discretionary in state budgets is public higher education. And we all know that the pathway to a better future for the state, West Virginia, the nation, is to improve the educational attainment levels of our citizens. Mm-hmm. And that requires investment. And what's happening is a cost shift. The cost shift from both federal and state support to more responsibility mm-hmm. borne by the students and their parents. Mm-hmm. And I kind of look at it and say, well, we're talking about not wanting to increase taxes. But it's a de facto higher education tax that's being implemented on students and their families who are trying to find that pathway to a better future and to the American dream.
Now, you held a series of forums late last year.
Yes,
I was honored to ask to moderate these forums, and I learned a lot. But I could tell that a lot of frustration on behalf of students, staff, faculty, and of the legislators who came to hear these grievances, a lot of frustration. What did you take away from those forums?
Well,
and did they help at all?
I think they helped. I think that we were able to raise the profile, if you will, of these issues and brought them to the attention of many of our legislators in the various counties that we serve mm-hmm. directly at Marshall University and our other campuses. But by bringing their attention to this, the issue is people want it solved. By solving, it's basically, what are your solutions for closing the structural budget gaps that currently exist that require the state year in and year out to continue to cut funding to public higher education? If we're really serious about improving educational opportunity and providing access, affordable access to our students of West Virginia and people who come here, mm-hmm. then it requires investment. And when we talk about the future of the state, the future of economic development of the state, the investment that our state makes and our nation makes in higher education is very critical to that goal. And we're moving away from it. We're migrating, without necessarily declaring a public policy, away from public support with a heavier and heavier emphasis on private support, and hence privatizing public higher education.
Okay, so what's your remedy? What would you advise? What do you want the governor and the legislature to do?
Well, if you look at the budget projections, and you know, fortunately the budget office in the state does five-year, year-by-year projections, and you're looking at a three-year structural budget deficit over the next three fiscal years. And the question is, are there short-term solutions that the state can enact to close those budget gaps and not require the kind of cuts that have been happening in recent years?
What solutions?
Well, there's been a bill introduced by Delegate Morgan in the House to increase the sales tax by 1% with a sunset provision in fiscal year 18 that the bill would lapse at that point. So it's a temporary measure to basically provide bridge funding. The estimates are it'll generate around $200 million annually to help with solving the budget conundrum that the state is in right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the budget cuts that the state has implemented in recent years, the total annual loss of income or revenue for the state is over $450 million. And if you really want to look at this, our budget problem today is a product of all of these decisions that have been made in previous years to eliminate certain taxes. But the economic growth hasn't happened.
Hmm.
We have not backfilled that lost revenue through expansion of the economy in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not unique to West Virginia, but the point is there's a responsibility to solve problems. I understand the politics that are involved. I think a lot of other people do as well. But there are very serious issues that the state's facing, and we need solutions. Mm-hmm. Another approach is to take a look at the rainy day fund and ask, how's it being invested? Is it being invested?
This is the rainy day fund with about $900 million in it.
Well over $900 million. And if If the investments are producing de minimis returns, then that's a lost opportunity for the state and for the legislature to help close this gap.
Well, how's the rainy day fund invested now?
As I understand it, the rate of return that's being generated is about 0.1% annually, mm-hmm. which is about as de minimis as it can get.
So you would ask the governor and the legislature
to take a look at whether or not they can increase through fixed investments that are very low risk, very low volatility investments, and there are investments like that out there, manage it more effectively than what is being done right now to provide part of the solution of what we're looking for.
All right. Moving on, the Research Trust Fund called Bucks for Brains, how is that doing?
It's doing well at Marshall. We've been able to attract a number of National Institutes of Health grant-funded investigators. We have a new director of our Marshall Institute for Interdisciplinary Research who is multiple NIH grant-funded. He has just been awarded a grant from company in China that totals over $1 million. It's being invested in his research. He's a proven researcher from the standpoint of patenting discoveries and then licensing those patents, and that's what we're all about, is trying to grow the enterprise, if you will, through commercialization of patented discoveries that can launch into new business ventures. Mm-hmm. He's brought a fairly large group of researchers with him, and we expect to see continued expansion of that. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen overnight, but the advantage from the state perspective is, if you recall, in 2008, the state set aside $50 million to be matched by private gift monies, dollar for dollar. And we did that, and our sister institution did it as well, so we have literally $100 million sitting in endowments, one at WVU, one at Marshall. Mm-hmm. We're not permitted to spend the corpus, so that $50 million that was provided by the state will stay there. We're only permitted to spend the proceeds or the earnings on that endowment mm-hmm. to support research. Mm-hmm. And we believe, and we're seeing the benefits of this, because what it provides is a continuing annual return on those investments that's reinvested, if you will, in the research enterprise, the employment of researchers, the expansion of research activities, and it doesn't cost the state anything. We're simply using the money.
But I understand it needs a new influx of money.
If we're going to keep this going, we need to set aside another bolus of one-time money.
How much?
I'd like to see a repeat of the $50
million. All right.
But, you know, what I'm looking at is we're leveraging private gift money dollar for dollar, so it's an investment by private donors in the future of the state and the future of research enterprises in the state, matched against what the state's putting in. And every study I've seen that has been published since this Research Trust Fund was set up, mm-hmm. cites that as a shining star for the state of West Virginia on their commitment to this type of economic development.
We are going to have to leave it there. Dr. Stephen Kopp, Marshall University, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Beth. Great to be with you.
And here's a look at some of the bills introduced in the House today. Among the bills introduced in the House today, House Bill 4477 to rewrite the article concerning the practice of psychology. House Bill 4479, Voter ID, to require voters to present identifying documents issued either by the state of West Virginia or the United States government that contains the name, address, and a photograph of the person desiring to vote. House Bill 4484, to establish a maximum ratio of the number of employees of the West Virginia Department of Education to the number of students enrolled in the state after June 30, 2017, at not greater than one employee to 2,000 students. Among the bills up for passage in the House tomorrow, House Bill 4237, to define alternative nicotine products and electronic cigarettes, prohibit the sale of these products to individuals under 18 years of age, and add these to the list of products for which unannounced inspections may be conducted to ensure compliance with sales restrictions. And House Bill 4412, to create a one-day special license for charitable events to sell beer for a $25 fee. Among the bills on second reading in the House tomorrow, House Bill 4188, to update the authority and responsibility of the Center on Nursing and to establish a nursing scholarship program. House Bill 4301, to allow reciprocal use of hunting and fishing licenses with the Commonwealth of Kentucky on the Big Sandy and Tug Fork Rivers. House Bill 4302, to allow the use of county election officials to conduct elections held for public school purposes. House Bill 4343, to encourage economic development and job creation by creating the West Virginia Project Launchpad Act. House Bill 4394, to improve the process for employing highly qualified professional personnel in public schools. Among the changes made in the bill are several to ensure that positions filled by retirees and not fully qualified teachers are posted statewide and easily available to new graduates and reduction in force teachers who are seeking employment, allowing capable teachers to more easily obtain certification in additional content areas, ensuring teachers and principals consider applicant qualifications for employment, and limiting the movement of professional personnel to other counties. And House Bill 4402, to provide a procedure for the conditional discharge for first offense underage purchase, consumption, sale, or possession of alcoholic liquor. This has been the Legislature Today. We welcome your comments. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for the Legislature Today provided by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at WVAFLCIO.org, and by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont, online at WVHTF.org.